Room Pod, part of the White Dragon Podcast Network. Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'll be your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hi, Susie!
Happy New Year to you, Barbara, and to all of our listeners. Woohoo! We made it to 2015.
It's unbelievable.
I know it. The odds were against me from the start, but I've proved them all wrong.
Same here.
Excellent. So I just want to remind everybody to become part of the discussion group on Facebook by searching the Groom Pod. You can find Barbara at groomblog.blogspot.com and also at our shopping site, which is shop.bieber.biz. And the emails for the show are barbara@thegroompod.com and Susie, S-U-S-Y, @thegroompod.com. All right, well, that's all the housekeeping. Now for the news.
Now it's time for grooming news and reviews, brought to you by Groomer to Groomer Magazine and Barkley Productions.
Guess what? There's no news.
No news? Don't yes, they say that no news is good news?
Yes, they do. It does make for a slow podcast. So, so for today's news, I thought we would just find out a little bit about you, Barbara. I know that a lot of our listeners already know about you, and of course I know a little bit about you, but why not talk about it for a minute here since we've got a moment. So, where were you born?
I was actually born in Hollywood.
In Hollywood?
Yes, my father was working as a taxi cab driver and in Hollywood, and I was born at City of the Angels Hospital.
Cool. What did your mom do?
My mom had just graduated from college and was, I think, pregnant with me.
That's pretty impressive for those days to have a woman graduating from college.
Right, well, and actually, she graduated and my father didn't.
Well, there's a little role reversal.
Right.
So, I know you've got some college behind you, so where'd you go to college?
I went to the University of Arizona, where I received a BA with a major in psychology, and then I went on to get a master's of social work degree from Arizona State University.
How did you end up in Arizona?
Well, that's where my parents met. My parents met here at the U of A. My father's family is longtime pioneer Arizona folks, and my mother came out to the University of Arizona to study archaeology.
Well, so how did you end up in grooming then from social work?
I burned out, Susie. I burned out bad. I flamed. No details to ever be shared.
No worries.
It was ugly, honey. It was ugly, and I was desperate, and I had an ex-boyfriend and friend that I had who was in the dog show world and who happened to own a boarding kennel grooming facility, and I begged him for a job, and he took me on as a bather for $2 an hour.
Wow.
And then what happened was that I had known him for a while, and I had been hanging out and watching him groom for a long time, and I was doing dog shows with my mom. We had Laza Opsos, and I would always drift over to the handling area and watch them groom. So I was always fascinated by grooming. And after Bill took me on, reluctantly I might add, as a bather, I begged him to teach me to groom.
So you came in through the back door then.
I really did. I came in. It was rough.
Right.
It was a rough beginning. It was a low point in my life. I was the low man on the totem pole at the place I worked at. I was the brunt of everything. And they gave me a hard time because I had that college education. So they thought I was very misplaced and that I'd never make it. And, you know, and that I wasn't up to the physicality of grooming. Well, I proved them all wrong.
Yeah, look at you now, still grooming. That's very, very impressive. So when you started working for the dog show guy. When did you go off on your own?
About 4.5 years later, I went off on my own. And ultimately, he ended up, first I worked for a mobile groomer for a few months, and that was just absolutely horrible because this was in the days before anything. this was the days before high velocity dryers. This was the days before generators in mobile units. You know, we had to plug into the customer's home and blow their electricity. And it was a franchise operation, and the owners had never groomed, and the owner's wife thought she could teach herself grooming better than we could. And it was very stressful, and it was in the summer, and you couldn't run your dryer and the air conditioning at the same time. And I measured that it got to be 140 degrees in my van.
Wow.
While drying a dog. Now that's not good for people nor good for the dogs. It was scary. And I ended up my customers at the mobile encouraged me to go on my own.
That makes sense. So then you just went out and rented a space, that same space pretty much that you're in now, right?
Yeah, I've only ever had one space for like 38 years or something, you know. And I'll tell you about that space a little later on when we get to intentions of for the next year. The space looks like I've been in the same space for 38 years.
I've been in my house for about 20 now, and I can imagine what it would be like if I had been grooming here for 30 years.
With no storage.
No storage at all. I've seen that. So, so after you started grooming and you were doing your own thing for a while, when did the teaching bug hit you?
Well, the teaching bug thing happened after the internet came along. And I will confess that I had a long period, maybe even 10 years, where I kind of plateaued in my learning, and I thought I had reached my peak. And I figured I was better than the average groomer, but I would never be much more than that. And I was doing 8 to 12 dogs a day on my own and just plowing through it. And then I hooked up on the internet, on the original Groomers Lounge list with Joyce Lafferty. And I started writing.
Ah.
So, you know, even back then when you had to contain your emails, because in the beginning, you couldn't write very, very long things, which was a handicap for me, for sure.
Definitely.
But I learned how to do it, and I reconnected with the pleasures of writing, with my passion for putting something into words, And then I hooked up with Curtis Hanvey, who was on that list, and then Curtis got booted off of that list, and he asked me to moderate his list that he subsequently, he got booted off because he was promoting his own stuff too much.
Ah.
He was a little bit too passionate. And asked me to moderate his list, and I started moderating the Groom TNT list, and then that's where I really started becoming a spokesperson. And actually, Curtis, I fell into a speaking event in Denver for the Colorado Groomers because they somebody couldn't come at the last minute, and they got referred to me and called me, and I jumped on the opportunity. And I went to the Colorado trade show, with like a week's preparation, and did a really good job, and they invited me back. And out of that, then Curtis suggested to Ann Stafford that I come to Atlanta, and Atlanta became one of my main places where I was speaking. And so it just blossomed out of that. And again, I came in through the side door of being a speaker, because I didn't come through the traditional way of becoming a grooming spokesperson and an educator is through the competition grooming ring. So you sort of prove yourself with your grooming first, and then you get sponsors, and then you're picked up and asked to prepare presentations, and your grooming, your competition career is your credentials. Well, I just came through the side door. I sort of like self-created myself as a speaker and educator, and it stuck because I had the stuff behind it, if I may say so myself. Because I can write, and I've really enjoyed my place in the grooming industry as a result of that.
Well, you can count me as your biggest fan. You already know that. But I think you're just so gifted and fantastic that I wanted to share you with the world in my own special way. Look out. Here it comes. It's your mobile moment. What do you do if you're running late, Barbara? It's a constant problem for me because I never shut up. So I'm always talking to everybody. Talk, 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 talk. And in a mobile, it's even worse because you've got so many different variables. You have traffic issues, you've got the pet issues, and you have client issues, all of which can really mess up your timing. So for me, I've always thought of it as the best defense is a good offense. I know that's an old cliche, but it's very true. When I call the client the night before, I always remind them that my appointment time is my best guess, and I give myself an hour's grace period. So if you don't see me within an hour of that appointment time, figure I've been in a wreck or something's gone wrong. So I give myself a little bit of a break there by giving myself an appointment time of 1 hour. Now, normally I'm never more than 30 minutes behind, but occasionally when traffic goes bad in the Northwest, I do get a little bit late. The other thing that's really, really, really important as a mobile is if you are late, please call your client. Communication is so very important in this case. You know, they're sitting around waiting for you to show up. Their dog is at the door usually going, oh my gosh, Susie's on her way. And then you don't show up. So I don't like to have people hold me up, and I don't like to hold other people up. So I'll always call. So one thing that I always think is very important to remember is that it's much easier to cancel one dog and to catch back up on the rest of your day than it is to slide everybody out and have to make 3 phone calls to tell everyone you're going to be late. It's just better to cancel that one dog. My horseshoer explained that one to me. So you're running late, you look at your schedule, and you're now 45 minutes late to that next dog. And then you have 2 dogs afterwards. Well, cancel the next dog. See if you can reschedule them or bump them to the end of the day or bump them to a different day. And then you'll be on time for the next 2, and you won't ruin your whole entire day.
Good way to go. So I do a similar thing, although I rarely have to in the shop when I'm running late. Again, I think communication is the key, and I sort of know who my flexible clients are and who my not flexible clients are. So if I'm starting to see my day starting to slip and I know I'm not going to get dogs done on time, I look to find and my next 4 dogs, who's the most flexible, and I can delay their departure or even arrival, and I can call them and say, can I have your dog for an hour longer than we said? You know, can I keep them till 2 instead of 1, whatever, you know? And rather than just start flailing away at it and have them come in one after the other and you're not done yet, you know, that's just awfully stressful in the shop to have the people arrive and the dog goes all bananas and you're trying to, scissor the bangs. Well, yeah. So talking about finishing the bangs, let me just add this. When I do think that people are going to arrive and I'm not going to be done with their dog, I do the head first.
Great.
So I get that out of the way so that if I have to kind of skip on something, it's a feet or back end or, you know, some other finishing touches other than their head and face. So if I think that my time is slipping away and the people are likely to come before the dog's done, I quickly do the face and head.
That is a great suggestion. It's much easier to do the face and head before the owners show up and start peeking in the back of the room.
Yeah, right.
All right, so let's take a break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with our At the Table section, which is Stripping for Profit.
We invite you to check out the Bee Bird shopping cart at www.shop.beebird.biz. Here we offer selected equipment, tools and products, and Bee Bird educational materials. Now featuring the Handy Bathing Beauty and Australian Pro Magic Concentrate, a magic wand and a bottle. Shop with a groomer. It's good karma.
Hey everyone, it's your good pal Kev from the White Dragon Podcast Network, shamelessly interrupting your enjoyment of this tremendous WDPN podcast you're listening to. To basically shill to you. Bear with me here, folks. This will be brief. I know what you're all thinking. You're loving the tremendous audio spectacle currently delighting your auditory senses, and you're lamenting the fact that the stars of the WDPN are only around for you 1 hour per week, right? Well, you're wrong. We've got a whole slew of shows that will delight, entertain, and captivate you all week long. And the best part is that we've got something for everyone. Are you looking for something your whole family can enjoy? Well, look no further than Two Men and the Mouse, the flagship show of WDPN focusing on the magic and wonder of Walt Disney World. Pete Mandel and myself share our love of the most magical place on Earth as we count down the latest and greatest news of the week before diving deep into a featured topic. Maybe you're a fan of geek TV and movies. You love the worlds established in shows such as Arrow, Gotham, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Doctor Who, and so many more. Well, for you, we've got the Geek Watchtower. I'm joined each week by a special guest host as we review the latest installments of our favorite geek-centric media. Sometimes, though, the universe of geek pop culture can be a little too all-consuming and you need to go broad. That's why we've got Bat Squad Radio, hosted by the YouTube comedy trio known as the New Jersey Bat Squad. You'll hear me as Kev L, along with Bat Dave and Spider Denny, detailing the goings-on throughout all of geekdom. Perhaps you're more of a sports entertainment fan. Well, WDPN's got that covered as well. Step inside the world of professional wrestling with Ring Ropes Radio, the all-new pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Kevin Clark and I present to you all the viewpoints of two 10-plus years veterans of the wrestling business and supplement that with special interviews with the stars of wrestling's past, present, and future. Want more information on where you can find this plethora of internet audio entertainment? Well, head over to Facebook.com/WD Podcast Network and give us a like for all the latest news and new shows and episodes. Okay, I'm all done. I told you it would be quick. Well, this wasn't exactly quick, but whatever. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to our ads, and remember to support our sponsors. And I do want to mention that the Two Men and the Mouse podcast, the guy who does the Two Men and the Mouse podcast is our mentor. And I really enjoy that. If you like anything about theme parks or Disneyland, I highly suggest you listen to his podcast. And if you're into wrestling or pop culture, the other shows on the network are good as well. So I really appreciate everything he does for us. So I wanted to give him a little bit of an extra plug. So let's go over to the grooming table and talk about hand stripping. Now, hand stripping is a great specialty. It can make you good money, and it's really good for the skin and coat. So I don't do a lot of stripping, but Barbara, I know you teach hand stripping. So what dogs are best suited to strip?
Well, of course, we're looking primarily at harsh-coated terriers. And some of them are easier than others. For example, border terriers are usually a pretty easy terrier to hand strip, and they're a great beginner dog because there's no pattern. You just take down everything and then make this little, you know, this little otter face. And as opposed to some of the other easier dogs to work on are Norwich and Norfolk terriers, but there is a little bit of patterning and You need to know how to make the, you need to know how to capture the overall look. It doesn't just appear by itself. Cairn Terriers are pretty easy. I do Wire Fox Terriers are another level of difficulty because their overall finish groom is a little bit more technical and detailed. Scotties are good. Westies are can be a bit of a challenge because of them. And I think for me, the hardest terrier coat to hand strip are Schnauzer coats. They're they're just finer. They just don't pull as easily. It's harder to know what to pull and what to leave. While hand stripping isn't rocket science, it is a technical practice, and you have to learn through experience about coat growth and how what you pull out affects what comes in. And that's only going to happen with some experience over time. So it's really good to find a client if you're going to start hand stripping. It's good to find a client with a dog that has an easy to strip coat and a good tolerance of hand stripping, and then engage that client in your learning process. You know?
So, yeah, so are there dogs that are not conducive to stripping?
Yes, there's dogs who may have a good coat for stripping, but are not tolerant of the tugging. You know, like, I don't think that hand stripping hurts, but there is a little tugging sensation, and some dogs just can't tolerate any sensation, just like some dogs can't tolerate brush out. Some terriers are not willing to engage in the process and get stressed out or mouthy and aggressive. You just don't want to have to do that on those dogs. Older dogs get tired of the process. It is a more tiresome, it's a more time consuming, it requires a little bit more patience from the dog, and as dogs age, they lose that patience, they lose their willingness to engage. And then there's some terriers that come along that have just lousy coats that don't pull out well, don't pull out easily, they're too soft, they're just not, the coat itself is not suited.
So what if you're like me and you don't do any stripping, but you want to start? So all of your terriers in your client base now have been clippered. Is there a way to work around that?
Well, there are, you can turn a coat around. Not all individual coats are suitable for that process, but if you feel like the coat, you can pluck out some of the coat before you clip, that coat might be a candidate for turning around into a hand strip coat. And you would do that really slowly over time, because what you want to do is muck out or rake out or card out as much dead coat as you can. Allow new growth to come in, and then when that new growth gets old, you pull that out and you start that way stripping the coat. It's harder once coat is cut or clipped. It grows in differently and it does not release like the original coat would. You have something that's more like a fully more undercoat takes over the hair follicles. The hair follicles become thin and actually stay more firmly implanted than the original harsh coat that rests and sheds.
So, what tools are required for stripping?
You know, my favorite tools to start out hand stripping, if you're beginning, are latex gloves and a good coat king, because with our pets we can cheat enough. It's okay to cheat and rake out a lot of coat with something like a coat king. And then I always teach hand stripping using latex gloves or finger cots. Another good beginner tool is the Sally Hawks Stripping Stone. You can get that from Groomers Mall and other places too, I'm sure. But that's a pumice stone that's got wrapped in something like vet wrap, so you have a grip, and you can pinch the hair against that stone, and it will help you pluck out hair, and it's not going to let you pluck so much that you hurt the dog. You need to learn how to adjust the amount of hair that you pluck to the dog's tolerance. And there are some dogs that you can just go to town on, and there are other dogs that you have to be a little bit more laid back and careful.
So using the correct tools probably is paramount to saving your hands when you're doing a lot of hand stripping, right?
Yeah, and you know, like, technique is really important, Susie, because the idea in pulling out coat is that you don't use your wrist a lot. You don't bend at the wrist. You just pull straight out in the opposite direction, well, in the direction of growth, actually. Like, you pull it out, and you don't twist your wrist or flip your wrist as you're doing that. You're just pinching and pulling and pinching and pulling, and you want to learn how to do it with the least amount of pressure on your thumb and fingers, so that, because, you know, like, what tends to happen, and I think this happens with groomers with other tools too, we over grip. We get, especially when we're learning or if we're pissed off or impatient, yes. We over grip our tools, and that leads to more stress on our hands. You know, I've been hand stripping. I have to be careful what kind of stripping I'm talking about here. Yeah. I've been hand stripping for about 20 years now, and my right hand is in pretty good shape. The hand that I'm having trouble with is my left hand, my holding hand. And that hand is going to hell in a handbasket. Ha, hand joke.
I love a good pun. Okay, so moving on. When you're going to start to strip a dog, when you're prepping the dog, are you stripping a clean dog? Are you stripping a dirty dog? Are there any special products you use in the bath? That kind of thing.
Well, the traditional way is to always work on the dirty coat. Because you're going to be able to pull it out. Once you bathe and soften the coat a little bit, it's not as easy to pull, not as easy to pluck. So traditionally, terriers are stripped with dirty. And in fact, for show, dogs that are being campaigned for show, the jacket, the body part of those dogs is rarely bathed.
Wow.
It's dry cleaned. There are dry cleaning products, which usually are alcohol based, which help remove some of the oils and dirt and freshen the coat without changing the texture of the coat. What you see them bathing are the furnishings, the legs, the beard, like that.
Okay, so you do a dirty dog. When you're doing a dog in your shop, then do you bathe it and send it home clean?
Mostly, but I have some customers that work with me, and they bathe the dog about a week or two before the appointment, and then I can just dry clean the dog. And there again, sometimes if the feet are dirty or something, I'll do the feet, but I don't always do a full wet bath on all of my hand strip terriers. It just kind of depends on the people.
Okay. Do you strip the heads, or do you clipper the heads when they're pet dogs?
Well, certain heads, like Border Terrier head, I would hand strip. Cairn Terrier, Westie heads, I would do hand strip. But the Scotty heads, Schnauzer heads, Wire Fox Terrier heads, on those heads I clip. Hand stripping those kinds of heads is often takes as long as the whole body, and that just adds a great deal, a big burden on the groomer and on the customer to pay for your time. So we generally just clip the heads of those kinds of terriers that have tight heads and pluck the heads of Norwich. Cairns and Westies, I do a combination of pulling out some hair and scissoring the heads.
Even I pluck some of the heads on my Westies and especially eyebrows on the Schnauzers, just to kind of get that harsh coat to grow in a little bit and get the hair going the direction that they're supposed to go.
Yeah, I use gel.
Ah, gel works.
I use gel and mousse, and I just puff them up that way. And I use Isle of Dogs styling spray. It's a great holding spray. It's a little bit more firm than Chris Christensen Thick and Thicker. It's a little more firm, and so you can comb through it. So you can kind of spray the coat and then lift it all up on the top of the head, and it just stays right up there.
A little bit better than that granny glue, huh? You can't comb through that stuff.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot more different sprays out on the market. We can talk about that another time. Love
Excellent.
To.
So how do you schedule these guys?
Depends on their regularity. If they're I have two kinds of hand stripping customers. I have the ones that will come in on a regular schedule, like 6 to 8 weeks, and then I have ones that want a total takedown twice a year. Those total takedown twice a year, those are going to be dogs that I need to have for at least 4 hours. Not that I'm going to be working on them for 4 hours, but I'm going to have to get something else done while I'm working on, you know, I think it would be harder to do hand stripping in a mobile because you can't have anything else going in the stream of business while you're hand stripping. And one of the reasons that I'm being successful with my hand stripping is that I've taught my assistant who bathes and preps for me how to pluck. So she can just get rid of a lot of coat, and then I just have to set lines, do the detailing, style, often which happens after the bath, or what she calls my magic. Okay, time for your magic.
That's another topic for another show as well, is bathers and how to use them and how to pay them. And,
sure, I'd love to.
Yeah, we're going to do that one. So I got one more question about hand stripping, and it's the big one. How do you charge?
A lot.
Yeah, I knew that.
Well, here's what I charge. I charge $75 for the first hour and about $50 for the hours after that. So for a lot of my routine hand strip dogs, I charge $85 to $95, which is like an hour of hand stripping plus the bath and styling. And then I have, for those twice a year kind of dogs, they are usually about $125.
Okay, so as you can see, it's profitable, it's good for the dog, and it's good for the groomer if you do it the right way. So there's our wrap up on the hand stripping topic. Now let's move on to those grooming resolutions. So here we are at a new year, and everybody always tries to, you know, think about what their resolutions are going to be. So do you have any grooming resolutions for this year?
Well, before I tell you what my plans are, I've got to say that I've got issues with the term resolution.
You do?
That's because, well, Susie, it's become weakened by all of our failure to keep our resolutions. So the concept of New Year's resolution, it has become kind of empty.
I agree with that.
You know, like every time we make a resolution and fail to keep it, we weaken the hold of that making a resolution. So I've ditched the concept of resolutions because they're often empty promises or kind of wishes. Yeah, I can make a resolution that I'm going to lose 50 pounds this year, but I would rather set goals and create intentions.
Because, I think goals are good.
Yeah, goal setting and sometimes just intentions. Like I have an intention this year of being a little nicer to the cat I own that I don't like. because I use the F-bomb around that cat a lot, and I curse him. I mean, he's just an annoying pet, and he's very demanding and just not bright, and you know, he's not easy to live with, and I just have an intention to clean up my language. I mean, not that he cares that I drop the F-bomb, but it's my energy. It's affecting my energy field when I do that, and it's just like not a good way to start the day. Even though he insists on annoying the F-bombs out of me first thing in the morning, I'm not going to give in. I am not gonna tell him to F off. I'm going to say good morning.
One of my grooming goals this year is to become a better scissorer, better at finish scissoring.
Oh, good.
So I've kind of set an intention that I will pick one dog a week and take my time and really finish that scissoring to a competition level. So that's one of my intentions, I hope.
Okay, so let me point out. Can I point out, use your intentions as an example? That's excellent. I love the way that you created the intention and then you stated how you were going to achieve that. So you created a goal to improve your scissoring, and then you had a means to that goal. Now, that's really different than just a resolution. I like that one.
Okay. I've got another one, and it's related to the fact that I've lost a lot of clients over the year, the last 2 years, because I've been grooming for about that amount of time where the dogs I started with are all passing away. And I really, really hate adding new people. I don't like people. I know it's odd because I certainly
not. Good luck.
But I recognize that I probably need to add a few people to my client base. So I'm trying to figure out the best way to do that. And what I've decided I'm going to do there is I'm just going to mention to all of my existing clients who continuously ask me if their friends can join my client list, I'm going to let a few of those in. And then at least I can feel comfortable about where they're coming from. And maybe it won't be quite so scary to add some new people.
I have an intention to deep clean and reorganize my shop.
That's
it's a major one. It's a major one. It's a goal. I want to achieve it by the end of February. And I actually have two people that I have engaged in supporting me in that intention and goal, who are local groomers who have worked with me and I've been mentoring, and they've offered to come in and actually do the deep cleaning while I'm there, saying we can throw this away, we can't throw that away, you know, like that kind of thing. And I'm reorganizing. I want to reorganize so that I can get my table where I finish groom out of the bathing room, because I'm sick and tired of Yvonne blowing my scissored coats while she's oh gosh, you just can see my face get all frowny. I get all grumpy because I just hate that. You know, it works out well to be right next to your bather when you're training someone. But once they're trained and they're doing a pretty good job, I want to get away from that, and I want to create. And also, I'm having a lot of trouble with my knees and hip, and the walking back and forth from the back room to the counter is killing me. So I can move my table up close to the counter in the front room, and then I'll be there to do my kind of reception work with the customers, and I'll be away from the high velocity dryers.
So what I like about your intention there is that you've involved other people with it. So you've got a little accountability there. You have a plan and accountability.
Maybe, and they're already asking me when. So we are going to get started on this before my birthday this month.
Impressive.
Susie this month.
That's so scary. I know, both of us.
Shoot!
Woo!
This one's a big one. We can talk about that next week. One's a big, scary one.
Oh, I hope be fine. It's only a number anyway.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, it's a huge number.
I've got another couple things. I'm going to lump them together.
Oh, I have another goal.
Oh, okay.
I want to share this one. I have a goal, goal to create several new roll-on aromatherapy blends.
Yay.
And introduce them at Atlanta Pet Fair.
Oh, excellent. Excellent, excellent. I love your aromatherapy. I use it regularly.
Well, this is personal aromatherapy. I've got about 4 blends that I'm doing now, including my favorite one that's called Anger Management, that I developed when I had an employee that I just constantly was angry at. And I'm going to develop that into a much fuller line of roll-on personal aromatherapy for groomers to use at work or at home.
That sounds great. I'll be online for that for sure.
Okay.
So what I've got to do is I've got a bunch of shampoo. I mean, I've got a bunch of shampoo. So I know that shampoo has a finite shelf life. So another one of my intentions this year is to actually not buy new shampoo, but use up the shampoo I have. It's so hard.
I know, because we drift into new favorites.
Yes, and it's good to have variety. And then I find out that I've got a puppy shampoo back there I noticed the other day that's been there for a little while. I really need to use that up. So I am full on going to bring 1 gallon in the trailer, and I'm going to make that the shampoo of the week, and I'm going to use it up.
Great.
That is a big one for me. And then my very last intention is related to this podcast, and it is promote the podcast everywhere and anywhere I possibly can. And I think it's great. I've gotten a lot of really good feedback from both vendors who've been listening and from groomers who've been listening. But what we really need to do is we need to get the word out. You guys, tell your friends, get everybody on the bandwagon. Let's grow this thing. So that is huge for me. It's a real focus of my life. And even more important to me than adding the few more people I need to add is the focus on this podcast. So I hope you guys all appreciate it, because it is really fun to do. So do you have anything else you want to add on our grooming intentions?
Well, yes, I am intending to relaunch my webinar series this year.
Great.
And, you know, I'm not going to promise to do that before Atlanta Pet Fair, but I am going to promise to do that by May.
Okay. You've got it. It's now marked in history, so by May we'll...
Now I have to do it. I'm making a note of what I promised.
Excellent. And be part of the discussion group. Give us some questions that we can answer so we can bring you in and be part of the show. I know you're all out there. I can see you listening by my statistics. So you're out there. So give us some feedback. I love the feedback I got last week. Anything else, Barbara, you want to wrap up with?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, I guess that does it for this edition of the Groom Pod, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at the Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com, or Barbara at Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening, and see you real soon.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.